I hope there wasn't anyone you specially wanted to see, Miss Marple. I wasn't here when it happened. My husband and I only came over from Africa a few days ago.
It's very simple, really. I read in the paper about Gladys having been murdered, and of course I knew all about her.
Oh!
I trained the girl for domestic service, and since this terrible thing has happened to her, well, I felt that I ought to come and see if there were anything I could do about it.
I think that it's a very good thing you have come. Nobody seems to know very much about her, relatives and all that.
No, of course not. She didn't have any relatives. She came to me from the orphanage.
I never even saw her. Was she a pretty girl?
Oh, no, not at all. Adenoids and a good many spots. She was rather pathetically stupid, too. But that did not stop her from being very keen on men.
Poor soul. It can't have been much of a life. It seems so horrible and futile that she should have been caught up in this thing. I suppose she'd seen or noticed something.
But to put a clothes peg on the poor girl's nose.
The whole thing is such a horrible nightmare. A pointless murder without any rhyme or reason to it.
Oh, I wouldn't say that, you know.
I think you better come and speak to Inspector Neil. He's in the house now. He's a very human person. For a policeman.
And the girl actually lived in your house, then?
That is why I feel responsible for her in a kind of way. She was a very silly girl, you know. She wouldn't know what to do if something came up. Oh, dear. I'm expressing myself very badly.
You mean that she didn't have good judgment as to what was important or not, is that it?
Oh, yes, exactly, Inspector.
When you say that she was silly...
She was the credulous type. She was the sort of girl who would have given her savings to a swindler. If she'd had any savings.
What about men?
Oh, she wanted a young man badly. In fact, I think that is why she left St. Mary Mead. The competition there is very keen. She did have hopes of the young man who delivered the fish. Young Fred Parkin had a pleasant word for all the girls. But, of course, he did not mean anything by it. That upset Gladys quite a lot. But I gather she did find herself a young man in the end.
It seems so. Albert Evans, I gather his name was. She seems to have met him at some holiday camp. He was a mining engineer, or so she told the cook.
That seems most unlikely. But I dare say it is what he told her. As I say, she would believe anything. You don't connect him with this business at all?
No, I don't think so. He never seems to have visited her, though there were a few postcards.
Oh, well, I'm glad that she had her little romance, since her life was so brutally cut short. I wonder... I suppose it would be a great presumption on my part. If I could possibly assist you in my very humble and, I'm afraid, very feminine way...
Assist me?
Talk to people. They might say things to me that they'd never say to you. There is a Miss Ramsbottom here, I believe, who is interested in foreign missions.
You may have something there. I can't say that I've had much success with the lady.
Oh, it is very kind of you, Inspector. This is such a wicked murder, and the wicked should not go unpunished.
That's an unfashionable belief nowadays, Miss Marple. Not that I don't agree with you.
Of course, I only know what little I've been able to read in the newspapers, but they are often so sensational, and one cannot really be certain of having just the sober facts.
They're not particularly sober. To put it briefly, Mr. Fortescue died in his office as a result of taxine poisoning. Taxine is obtained from the berries and leaves of yew trees.
How very convenient. And Mrs. Fortescue?
She was taking tea in the library. Somebody slipped cyanide into her cup.
Such dangerous stuff. Necessary for taking wasps, of course, but one has to be very, very careful.
You're quite right. There was a packet of it in the gardener's shed.
Again, most convenient. Was Mrs. Fortescue eating anything?
Oh, yes.
Cake, I suppose. Bread and butter. Scones, perhaps. Jam, honey.
All that, of course, but the cyanide was in the tea, Miss Marple.
Oh, yes, I understand that, but it is rather significant, don't you think?
Hmm?
And what about poor Gladys?
It seems that she took the tray with the tea into the library, but when it came to the second tray, the one with the cakes and things, she got no further than the hall. She must suddenly remember that she'd left some clothes drying outside on the clothesline. While she was taking them down, somebody slipped a stocking round her neck and, well, that was that.
And the clothes peg was clipped on her nose.
Yes, a sneering, vicious, unnecessary thing to do.
Surely not unnecessary, Inspector.
I'm sorry?
It does all make a pattern, doesn't it?
I don't quite follow you, Miss Marple.
No, I think there was probably a reaction against nursery rhymes when you were a little boy. Of course, it is a great impertinence on my part, saying this sort of thing to you.
You can say anything you like, Miss Marple.
Well, I know I'm very old and rather muddle-headed, but what I mean to say is, have you gone into the question of blackbirds?
Blackbirds?
Sing a song of sixpence, a pocket full of rye.
Oh.
4 and 20 blackbirds baked in a pie. When the pie was opened, the birds began to sing. Wasn't that a dainty dish to set before the king?
But I still...
The king was in his counting house, counting out his money. The queen was in the parlour, eating bread and honey. The maid was in the garden, hanging out the clothes, when down came a dicky bird and pecked off her nose.
Good Lord.
I mean, it does fit. It was rye in his pocket, wasn't it?
Yes, yes, it was.
There you are. And Rex means king, of course. And he was in what you might call his counting house. And Mrs. Fortescue was the queen in the parlour, eating bread and honey.
Yes.
And so, of course, the murderer had to put a clothes peg on Gladys's nose.
That is why you think I should make inquiries about blackbirds.
I think it might be wise, because there must be blackbirds.
Come in.
I'm sorry to disturb you, sir.
Very well, Miss Waffle. I'll look into the matter. If you'd care to take a look over the things in the girl's room, I'll arrange for it to be opened for you.
Oh, that would be most kind of you, Inspector. As I say, I have not the least desire to interfere.
I thought you ought to see this, sir. I found it in the shrubbery. It must have been chucked out from one of the back windows.
A pot of marmalade? You mean this is the way they served it at breakfast?
Yes, sir. They don't go in for fancy pots. And Mr. Fortescue was the only one who ever took marmalade for breakfast.
Well, that made it very simple, didn't it? Of course, we'll have to have it analysed for any traces of taxin. Where's the marmalade kept?
They order the marmalade and jams in batches of 6 at a time. They put a new one in the pantry when the old one's getting low.
Which means that it could have been tampered with days before it was brought to the breakfast table by anyone who had access to the house.
Yes, sir. Did I gather that you wanted to give the old biddy the keys to the girl's room?
Yes, Sergeant. She may be an interfering old busybody, but there's just a chance that she'll find something that we've missed. She's got quite a reputation at the Yard. Sir Henry Clithering thinks the world of her.
Well, there's no accounting for appearances, sir.
Well, now I think I'll have a word with Miss Dove. I need to find out exactly when she last saw Gladys Martin alive.
It was in the hall. She was mooning about as though she was waiting for someone. I told her to bring in the tea.
And you yourself were coming from where?
From upstairs. I thought I heard the telephone ringing in the hall.
And Gladys had answered it, presumably?
Yes, she said it was a wrong number.
And that was the last you saw of her?
Yes, it was.
And when did Mr. Lancelot Fortescue arrive?
It would have been about 20 minutes later. I thought he'd arrived earlier, but...
What made you think he'd arrived earlier?
Because I thought I caught a glimpse of him through the landing window.
In the garden, you mean?
Yes, that's why I was surprised to see him when he rang the bell.
What time did you see this man?
It would have been about 5:20.
Oh, then it couldn't possibly have been Lance Fortescue that you saw. His train was late. He couldn't have arrived here before 5 minutes to 5 at the earliest.
Well, I'm sure I did see someone...
Which way was he going?
Along behind the yew hedge, towards the east side of the house.
Where the side door is?
Yes, that's right.
Thank you, Miss Dove. That may be very important. By the way, you can't tell me anything about blackbirds, I suppose.
What did he say?
Blackbirds.
You mean that silly business last summer? Ah, oh, but surely that can't have anything to do with...
I'd welcome an account of it from you, Miss Dove.
It must have been some silly joke. Mr. Fortescue found 4 dead blackbirds in his study here. The gardener had shot them and hung them up in the fruit bushes.
And somebody had cut them down and put them in Mr. Fortescue's study?
Yes.
How did Mr. Fortescue take it?
Oh, he was very annoyed. Not that it ever took very much to make him annoyed. Is that what you wanted to know?
For the time being.
Well, then I'd better be getting on. I need to see to the guest room.
Somebody coming to stay?
Rather the opposite. We had prepared a room for Mr. Gerald Wright, a friend of Miss Elaine's. He arrived at the Golf Hotel here the day after Mr. Fortescue's death.
The day after?
Miss Elaine wanted him to come and stay here, but in view of the other two tragedies, it seemed more suitable that he should stay where he was.
At the Golf Hotel? I think perhaps I should have a word with Miss Elaine.
He's a schoolmaster. We're not actually engaged. Didn't seem quite the right time.
What was your father's attitude towards Mr. Wright?
He didn't understand him. He wouldn't allow him in the house. Gerald's an intellectual, you see. He's got a lot of unconventional and progressive ideas.
I understand. Now, on the day of Mrs. Fortescue's death, you were the last person to see her alive, I believe.
Yes, I suppose I was.
And when was that?
About 5:20. I went out for a short walk.
To the Golf Hotel?
Yes, that's right. But Gerald wasn't there.
I see. Just one more thing. Do you know whether Mrs. Fortescue made a will?
I've no idea. I suppose so. People usually do.
Well, it doesn't necessarily follow. Have you made one?
No, I haven't. Up to now, I haven't had anything to leave.
And now you've got £50,000. Changes a lot of things, Miss Fortescue.
Oh, yes, Inspector. Adele's certainly made a will. She told me so.
And when would this have been, Mrs. Percival?
Not more than a month ago. I happened to be in the High Street when I saw her coming out of Ansell and Worrell's.
The local solicitors?
She told me that she wouldn't go to Rex's solicitors in London. My will's my own business, Jennifer, she said. I'll make it my own way and no one's going to know about it.
That's very helpful. There's just one other thing. What can you tell me about blackbirds?
Blackbirds? What kind of blackbirds?
I think they were meant to carry some kind of message.
Oh, I suppose you mean the ones last summer in the pie.
Pie?
It was all a very silly practical joke. I can't imagine who's been telling you about it. There was a veal and ham pie left out for supper on Sunday night. Somebody got hold of it, took off the crust, and put dead blackbirds in it. My father-in-law was quite shaken. He kept on asking whether any of us had noticed any strangers about the place. He was really rather frightened.
I am afraid that it was quite some time before Sergeant Hay remembered that he was supposed to be letting me have a look at Gladys's room. There wasn't very much to see. Some cheap and rather pathetic finery, her make-up things, and a pot of cream for her spots. And there were 3 picture postcards from her young man, written in a rather illiterate hand. One of them said, "Lots of nice-looking girls here, but not one that's a patch on you. Be seeing you soon, don't forget our date, and remember, after that, it's thumbs up and living happy ever after." Poor Gladys. No happy ever after for her, but a cruel death. And a clothes peg on her nose to fit into a nursery rhyme.
Blackbirds? What kind of blackbirds?
I wish I knew.
You surely can't expect Lance to know much about what's been going on here, Inspector. He's been away in Africa for years.
It wouldn't be something to do with the Blackbird Mine, by any chance?
Blackbird Mine? What's that?
The trouble is that I really can't remember very much about it. I just have a vague idea about some shady transaction in Father's past. Somewhere out on the west coast of Africa, I think. He had a tremendous row with Aunt Effie about it.
Aunt Effie?
Miss Ramsbottom. My mother's sister. Why don't you have a word with her about it?
Oh, do come in, Inspector. I've been having the most fascinating discussion with Miss Marple here about our missions in Sierra Leone. She's really remarkably well informed.
I'll leave you to talk to Miss Ramsbottom, Inspector.
There's really no need, Miss Marple.
I've asked Miss Marple to come and stay here in the house. No sense in throwing her money away on that frightful golf hotel.
Oh, it's very kind of you, Miss Ramsbottom, but I really think I must not intrude in a house of mourning.
Mourning? Fiddlesticks. Who'll weep for Rex in this house? Or Adele, for that matter. In any case, I want you to stay.
Then I shall go and telephone the Golf Hotel and cancel my booking.
And don't let them bully you into making you feel guilty.
Don't worry, I won't.
Yes, Inspector? What do you want?
I was wondering whether you might be able to enlighten me about the Blackbird Mine, ma'am.
So you've got on to that, have you? Well, sit down.
Thank you.
I can't tell you much.
I'd be grateful for anything you could tell me.
It's a long time ago now. 20 or 25 years. There was some concession or other in East Africa. Rex went out there with a man called Mackenzie, who was his partner in the business. Mackenzie died of fever, and Rex came home and said the concession was worthless. That's all I know.
I think perhaps you know a little more than that.
It's all hearsay. Mackenzie's family insisted that Rex had done something dishonest.
What kind of thing?
Mrs. Mackenzie was a very unbalanced woman. She came here and made out that Rex had murdered her husband. I believe she went into an asylum sometime later. She had a couple of young children with her who looked scared to death.
Was there anything in it, do you think?
I don't think that Rex would actually have murdered Mackenzie. But it wouldn't surprise me if he'd left him there to die. If he did, well, retribution's caught up with him. Now, that's quite enough of that. Send that marble woman back. She's the only sensible woman I've met in years.
Actually, having a room in Yew Tree Lodge made everything so much easier. I could sit in a corner of the drawing room with my knitting, and nobody would really be aware that I was taking any notice of them. There is a line in Alice in Wonderland which goes, "They are all very unpleasant people," which very accurately summed up the Fortescues. They were selfish and grasping, and utterly without moral scruple. And yet I couldn't help thinking how like they were to some of the people I had known in St. Mary Mead. There was Mrs. Percival, talking 19 to the dozen for all the world like Mrs. Mitchinson, the bank manager's wife, who one day said far too much. And Mr. Percival, with his pale hair and mean little mouth, just like that nasty Mr. Emmett, who came to stay for 6 months at Evelyn House and absconded with the money for the church restoration fund. And Elaine reminded me of that poor Miss Peabody, who used to do so badly in the Gymkhana every year, and who fell in love with the most unsuitable young curate from Woking. No, I cannot say that I warmed to the Fortescues. And yet I had the impression that they were all frightened. Frightened of what Inspector Neil might find out about them. Not that he seemed to be paying them much attention. He was far more interested in what he could learn from Adele Fortescue's a fancy man, Mr. Dubois, staying over at the Golf Hotel.
A lovely woman. A really charming woman. We often played golf together.
I believe you called at Yew Tree Lodge on the afternoon of her death.
Oh, no. I didn't do that. I never went near the house.
You were seen in the garden of Yew Tree Lodge at about 4:30.
Well, I may have passed that way, but I never went into the house.
You didn't go in through the side door and up to Mrs. Fortescue's room? You didn't try to find something in her desk?
You've got those damned letters, I suppose. She swore to me that she'd burn them.
You're not denying that you were a very close friend of Mrs. Fortescue?
Well, how can I, when you've got the letters? But you can't think for a moment that I ever thought of getting rid of Rex Fortescue.
Did Mrs. Fortescue?
No, but she was killed as well. Surely, the person who murdered her husband must have murdered her.
It might be so. But it is possible that Mrs. Fortescue killed her husband, and that after his death, she became something of a danger to somebody else. Someone who might have been the motive for Rex Fortescue's murder.
But that's preposterous. You can't suspect that.
She made a will, you know. She left you everything she possessed.
I don't want a penny of it.
Not that it amounts to very much. Her furs and jewellery, that's about it.
But I thought that her husband had left her every...
Did you, Mr. Dubois? That's very interesting. So you did know the terms of Mr. Fortescue's will, after all.
Well, what... What are you going to do about it?
Nothing at all for the time being. Not today. Do you happen to know in which room Mr. Gerald Wright is staying?
As it happens, Inspector, I was on the Isle of Man when Rex Fortescue was murdered. I can't say I was sorry to hear of his death. He was an out-and-out capitalist, and he victimized me for my political opinions.
I understand that you broke off your engagement to Elaine Fortescue when her father told you that he would cut her off without a penny if she continued to see you.
Oh, that's a very crude way of putting things. As a matter of fact, I was not prepared to sacrifice my political convictions for money.
But you have no objections now to marrying a wife who's just inherited £50,000?
Not in the least. The money will be used for the benefit of the community. But surely you haven't come here to talk about my politics.
No, Mr. Wright. I wanted to ask you about a simple matter of fact. I believe that you were in the neighbourhood of Yew Tree Lodge at the time of Mrs. Fortescue's death yesterday afternoon.
And what leads you to believe that?
You left the hotel at 4:15 and walked down the road in the direction of the house. It seems reasonable to suppose that you were going there.
I thought of it, but I considered that it would be rather a pointless thing to do. I'd arranged to meet Elaine at the hotel at 6:00. I went for a walk along a path that branches off from the road and returned to the hotel. Elaine did not keep her appointment. Quite natural under the circumstances.
Then, if someone said that they looked out of a window at Yew Tree Lodge and saw you in the garden at about 4:35...
I would say that they were mistaken, Inspector. Visibility would have been bad by then. I think it would be very difficult to be sure.
He's right, of course, and I can't say that I see him as a front-runner.
And Vivien Dubois?
It just doesn't add up. He isn't the type. Admittedly, he believed that Adele Fortescue had left him all her money, but by killing her, he was only going to draw suspicion onto himself. In any case, he would have been in for a pretty nasty shock.
You mean she changed her will?
No, nothing like that. But there was a clause in Rex's will that said his wife could only inherit if she survived her husband by 1 month.
So what happens to the money, sir?
It goes back to the firm. Or rather to the residuary legatee, Percival Fortescue.
Funny how everything seems to lead back to him.
Yes.
So where do we go now?
I'm going to have a word with Dr. Bernsdorf. I want to find out what, if anything, was wrong with Rex Fortescue. And there's something I want you to do for me, Sergeant.
Yes, sir.
Find out the address of that asylum where Mrs. Mackenzie is.
Do you want to speak to her, sir?
No. I think I might ask Miss Marple to have a word with her. She probably stands a better chance of getting her to talk.
And there was a clothes peg on the poor girl's nose. Such a nasty thing to do.
And the Lord thy God will put all these curses upon mine enemies, and on those who hated you.
That is what made me want to get to the bottom of it.
Can't you see I'm reading? There isn't much time.
I thought perhaps you might be able to help me.
Nothing to do with me. I don't go round putting clothes pegs on servant girls' noses.
But it was the blackbirds, you see, and the rhyme. Somebody put blackbirds on Rex Fortescue's desk a few weeks before he died.
He was a liar. A liar and a murderer.
And you see, I couldn't help thinking that these deaths might somehow be connected with the blackbird mine.
And thou shalt return and obey the voice of the Lord.
I believe that Mr. Fortescue and your husband went out to the mine together.
It was my husband's mine. He found it and staked a claim to it. But he needed money to capitalize it. If I'd been wiser, if I'd known more, I'd never have let him do it.
Oh, I do understand. If only we knew these things at the time. But do you think that Mr. Fortescue might somehow have been responsible for your husband's death?
Somehow? Nobody knows how he died or where he died. And all anyone knows is what Rex Fortescue said. And Rex Fortescue is a liar. Of course he killed him.
And the blackbirds on his desk? Can you tell me about that?
They were 9 and 7 and left without a father. I told them every day. I made them swear it every night.
Your children?
Donald and Roby.
And what did you make them swear?
That they'd avenge their father's death. And Donald went out to Dunkirk. Never came back. Killed in action, they said.
And your daughter?
Haven't got a daughter.
You mean that she too is dead?
Look here. Look here. In the Bible. Do you see? Her name was written here, but I've struck it out. The recording angel won't find her name in my Bible. She didn't keep faith, and so I cut her out. There isn't such a person as Reuben Mackenzie any longer. Now I want you to go away. I don't want to talk to you any more. I want to read my Bible.
Good morning. Can I help you?
You must be the glamorous Miss Grosvenor.
No,
we haven't met. I'm Lancelot Fortescue.
Oh!
We should be seeing quite a lot of each other in future. Is my brother in?
No, not yet.
Then I'll sit in his office till he gets here. Oh, Inspector. expect to find you in here.
Morning, Mr. Fortescue. You've come to take up your duties, I suppose.
So you've heard I've decided to come into the firm.
Your brother told me, sir.
Did he now? With enthusiasm?
The enthusiasm was not marked.
Poor Percy. I'm only trying to put the wind up him, you know. I couldn't really stand office life. I'd stifle in a place like this. I just want to make him sweat a bit. Get a bit of my own back.
Your own back? For what?
Oh, it's old history now.
There was a little matter of a check, I understand. Would that be what you're referring to?
You do your homework, Inspector. Yes, it was the check. I always suspected that my brother is... Talk of the devil.
Good morning, Inspector.
Good morning.
Hello, Lance. You didn't tell me you were coming in today.
I felt a zeal of work sweeping over me. Where would you like me to start?
Nowhere, just at present. What can I do for you, Inspector?
There's just one thing I wanted to mention. I understand that for the last months of his life, your father's general behaviour and conduct were a source of increasing anxiety to you all.
He wasn't well. He wasn't himself at all.
May I ask if you suspected that your father was suffering from what is familiarly known as GPI, General Paralysis of the Insane, a condition which terminates sooner or later in hopeless insanity?
Yes, Inspector, that is exactly what I did fear. That is why I was so anxious for my father to submit to medical treatment.
Which brings me to my second point. I understood you to say that you had no communication with your brother of any kind since he left England several years ago.
Quite so.
Yes, but it isn't quite so, is it? Last spring you were so worried about your father that you wrote to your brother in Africa to try and get his support by having your father medically examined and put under restraint if necessary.
Well, yes, but I really don't see...
And what was your reply to his letter?
I told Percy to go and boil his head and let the old man alone. Frankly, that was one of the reasons why, when I got that letter from my father, I came over to find out for myself. I must say there didn't seem to be much wrong with him. So I thought I'd better come home for good and see fair play.
That is a monstrous suggestion. And you actually think that we should be able to work together in this company? I won't have it.
Well, you can't stop it. I'm junior partner, remember? You can't get rid of me that easily.
The partnership can be dissolved.
You mean you buy me out? And what are you going to pay me with? After you've forked out £50,000 for Elaine, there won't be anything left.
We'd have to divide up the holdings. I'm sure the inspector doesn't want to hear all this.
Oh, don't worry, he's lapping it up. So, what are you going to fob me off with? Bogus diamonds, inaccessible rubies, oil wells that have run dry?
You know very well that you can rely on me to be scrupulously fair.
I wouldn't trust you an inch, Percy. You've always been a dirty, mean little skunk, and I've hated your guts ever since you forged that cheque to get me out of the way.
That is a...
But you're right on one thing. We couldn't work together in a million years. All I want is to get back to Africa where I'll never have to set eyes on you again. Give me father's rubbishy speculations. Some of them are bound to pay off in the end. And if you throw in the Blackbird mine, at least it will get the murdering Mackenzies off your back.
You surely can't believe all that rubbish.
Oh, I don't know. The inspector believes it. Don't you, Inspector?
Ah, Miss Marple.
Your sergeant said that you wished to see me, Inspector. Oh, I do hope I haven't kept you waiting. I was in the kitchen talking to Mrs. Crump about her pastry. I always think, you know, it's better to approach the subject gradually, don't you?
Oh, indeed.
And the way to a cook's heart, as they say, is through her pastry.
While what you really wanted to talk about was Gladys Martin. Did you find it helpful?
Oh, yes, I found it very helpful indeed. I really think that things are becoming very much clearer, don't you?
I do and I don't. Look, Miss Marple, I want to talk to you seriously.
Yes, Inspector.
In a way, you and I represent opposite points of view. One might almost call them sanity and insanity.
Now, what exactly do you mean by that, I wonder?
Well, Miss Marple, there's a sane way of looking at this case. Rex Fortescue's murder benefited certain people, one person, I may say, in particular. The second murder benefits the same person. The third murder, one might call a murder for safety.
But which do you call the third murder?
Exactly. I've had a feeling ever since you put forward the nursery rhyme idea that there was something wrong. The king in his counting house, the queen in the parlour, the maid hanging out the clothes.
But the deaths cannot have happened in that order. Mm. Gladys must have been murdered before Adele Fortescue, must she?
Exactly.
Because otherwise she would certainly have taken the second tray into the dining room.
Quite so. She took in the first tray and then something happened. Yes. Something lured her away into the garden. And once that had happened, I don't see the possibility of her death being long delayed.
Of course, you are quite right. It never was a case of the maid was in the garden hanging up the clothes. That was all camouflage, like the clothes peg, to make sure the thing fitted in with the rhyme.
Exactly. That's why I can't see eye to eye with you about this nursery rhyme business.
But it fits. You must agree it fits.
Oh, it fits, all right. But it leads us away from the real facts. Just for the moment, I'm going to concentrate on the reasons why sane people commit murder. We'll start with, who benefits by Rex Fortescue's death?
Quite a few people, I should imagine.
But one person in particular. His son, Percival. Now, he wasn't at Yew Tree Lodge that morning, and at first I thought that ruled him out, but I'm not so sure.
Because, of course, he could have put the taxine in the marmalade days before, and he was safe in the knowledge that his father was the only one who would ever eat it.
Precisely. Now, Consolidated Investments was in a bad way. If the firm had to pay out $100,000 to Rex Fortescue's widow, it would have crashed.
Ah.
But she died. And again, the principal gainer was Percival Fortescue.
But what makes it all so difficult, Inspector, is that he could not possibly have poisoned his stepmother or strangled Gladys, since he was in his office in the city at that time.
In other words, Percival is out, and yet everything leads to him. There are other possibilities, of course.
Mr. Dubois and Mr. Wright. I do so agree with you, Inspector. Wherever there is a question of gain, one has to be suspicious. The great thing to avoid is having in any way a trusting mind.
Always think the worst?
Oh, yes, I always believe the worst. What is so sad is that one is mostly justified in doing so.
Oh, I suppose it could have been Mrs. Percival. She was on the spot, she could have done it.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't seem quite right somehow, and it certainly doesn't tie up with your fantastic nursery rhyme theory.
Is it really so fantastic, Inspector?
If your theory is correct, then it all boils down to one person, doesn't it? You told me that Mrs. Mackenzie had made her children swear to avenge their father's death.
Yes.
Well, Donald was killed fighting at Dunkirk. But Ruby Mackenzie is still alive, and if, as I suspect, she is living in this house in disguise, then there is only one person that it can be.
I wouldn't be as certain as all that.
No, yes. Only one person.
And what brings you here, Inspector?
I wanted to talk to you about a couple of curious features in this case.
And what are they?
To begin with, there's the strange circumstance of the rye found in Rex Fortescue's pocket.
I agree, it is very curious, but I really cannot think of any explanation.
And then there are the blackbirds on Mr. Fortescue's desk and in the veal and ham pie. You were here at the time of both these occurrences, I think.
Yes, I was. It seems such a purposeless, spiteful thing to do.
Perhaps not entirely purposeless. What do you know, Miss Dove, about the blackbird mine?
I don't think I've ever heard of it, Inspector.
Tell me, is Miss Dove really your name?
What an extraordinary question. Are you suggesting that it is not?
That is exactly what I'm suggesting. I believe that your name is Ruby Mackenzie.
And what do you expect me to say to that? Do you want to see my birth certificate?
That might be helpful, or it might not. You could be in the possession of the birth certificate of a Miss Dove, a friend, perhaps, or someone who died.
It really is quite a dilemma for you, isn't it, Inspector?
Do you deny, categorically, that you are Ruby Mackenzie?
I shouldn't really like to deny anything. It's up to you to prove that I'm this Ruby Mackenzie, whoever she is. Prove it if you can, Inspector.
The old tabby's looking for you, sir.
Do you mean Miss Marple?
Yes, sir.
But I was talking to her not half an hour ago.
She says she's got something important to tell you.
Oh, very well. Where is she?
I believe she's in the library, sir.
You see, we never really finished our little talk, did we? I was not quite ready then to put my cards on the table. I mean, I wouldn't like to make any accusations unless I was sure about it.
Accusations? You mean you think you know who the murderer is?
Well, I know who killed Rex Fortescue. It was the marmalade which clinched the matter, showing how, as well as who, and well within the mental capacity.
Whose mental capacity?
Oh, I am sorry. I'm afraid I find it difficult sometimes to make myself perfectly clear.
I think it might be better if you were to start at the beginning.
Yes, of course. And the beginning is Gladys. I mean, I came here because of her, and you very kindly let me look through her things. And what with that and the nylon stockings and the telephone calls and one thing and another, it all came out perfectly clear. I mean about Mr. Fortescue and the taxine.
You have a theory as to who put the taxine into the jar of marmalade?
Oh, it is not a theory, I know.
You know?
It was Gladys, of course.
Are you telling me that Gladys Martin deliberately murdered Rex Fortescue?
Oh, of course she didn't mean to murder him, but that is what it amounts to. It was she who put the taxine in the marmalade. She did not know it was poison, of course.
What did she think it was, then?
I rather imagine she thought it was a truth drug.
A truth drug?
It is really quite instructive, the things these girls cut out of papers and keep.
What kind of thing?
Nowadays, nobody believes any longer that a magician can wave his wand and turn you into a frog. But if you read in the paper that scientists can give you frog-like characteristics by injecting you with certain glands, everyone will believe it. Science has taken the place of magic. And so, having read in her paper about truth drugs, Gladys would have believed it absolutely when he told her that that was what it was.
Who told her?
Albert Evans. Not, of course, that that was really his name. He met her last summer at a holiday camp, and he flattered her and made love to her and spun her some story about some frightful injustice that Rex Fortescue had perpetrated and how he must be made to confess and to make restitution.
But how do you know this?
Well, I do not know it, but I'm almost certain about it. He persuaded her to take a post here. Not difficult, considering the dreadful shortage of domestic staff. And when the day came that they'd agreed upon, she put the drug he gave her into Rex Fortescue's marmalade and put the rye into his pocket. I don't know what he told her to account for that, but as I told you from the beginning, Gladys Martin was a very credulous girl.
But what did she suppose was going to happen?
Albert told her that he would be at Rex Fortescue's office that morning, by which time the truth drug would have worked and Rex would confess everything. You can imagine the poor girl's feelings when she heard that Mr. Fortescue was dead. I suppose she must have thought that Albert had misjudged the dose and would have waited for him to get in touch with her.
And did he?
Oh, yes, by telephone.
Of course. Miss Dove said there was a phone call on the day of the girl's murder. Gladys said it was the wrong number. So he was arranging to meet her.
That was why she had on her best nylon stockings. But she wasn't going out. He was coming to the house.
Which he did.
And strangled her. She had to die, poor credulous girl. And then he put the clothes peg on her nose to make it fit the rhyme. The nearest he could get to the little dicky bird that pecked off her nose.
This man calling himself Albert Evans, are you saying that he wanted revenge for the Blackbird Mine business? Are you suggesting that Mrs. Mackenzie's son is alive, after all, and didn't die at Dunkirk?
Oh, no, I'm not suggesting that at all. Don't you see, Inspector, all this Blackbird business is a complete fake. It was used by somebody who'd heard about the Blackbirds.
The ones on the desk and in the pie?
Oh, yes. They were real enough, you see. They were put there by someone who knew about the old business of the mine and who wanted to frighten Rex Fortescue. But there was no question of killing him. The real murderer saw that he could make use of it and make it look as if the deaths were following the pattern of the nursery rhyme. But he wasn't after revenge. He was after money.
You mean that it was Percival Fortescue after all?
No, not Percival. Lance.
But that's just not possible.
He came over here in the summer to see his father. I don't believe for a moment that his father wrote to him or sent for him. Lance was determined to arrange a reconciliation with his father and to get himself a profitable position in the family firm. His father probably sent him back to Africa with a flea in his ear. But Lance had recently got married, and the pathetic pittance he was living on was not enough for the two of them. He was genuinely in love with Pat, who is a dear, sweet girl, and he wanted to lead a respectable, settled existence.
For the first time in his life.
And in his terms, that meant having a lot of money. While he was in England, he heard about the Blackbirds on his father's desk and in the pie, and he jumped to the conclusion that Mackenzie's daughter was in the house.
Who would be an ideal scapegoat for the murder.
Yes. I think he must have realized that his father's mental state was putting the whole company in danger, and that if he didn't act quickly, there would be a complete crash. So he stayed on in England, and found his unwitting accomplice, poor, credulous Gladys.
She would also provide him with the maid in the garden for the nursery rhyme.
You really think he planned it all in that detail?
I'm certain of it. Gladys would give him the alibi he needed for the murder of his father. For at the time she was putting the taxine in the marmalade, he would be in Paris on the last stage of his journey from Africa.
But how did he carry out the actual murders of Adele and Gladys?
Oh, it was child's play. He came by an earlier train than the one he said he'd caught and arrived just at the time when Gladys was in the hall with the second tray. He came to the side door and beckoned her.
He could have killed her in a matter of moments and then come round to the front door.
And while he was having tea with Adele, he found an opportunity to slip the cyanide in her cup before going off to see Miss Ramsbottom.
Yes, but what did he stand to gain by it? Was his share in the estate really big enough to cause him to kill three people?
That is exactly what I thought at first. But then, I happened to read in the Times something about uranium deposits being found in Tanganyika. And I wondered whether they might have anything to do with the Blackbird Mine.
So that was why he was offering to take it off his brother's hands. Mm-hmm. Of course. He was on the spot. He'd have known all about it.
Yes.
The mine would be worth a fortune. But how do you suppose I'm ever going to be able to prove any of this?
Oh, you'll prove it. You are a very clever man, Inspector. I've seen that from the first.
There's so much that still needs explaining, though. The Ruby Mackenzie business. I was certain she was living in this house.
And you were right. But you were after the wrong person.
Hmm?
Go and talk to Percival's wife. She came to this house as a nurse when he was suffering from a severe bout of pneumonia. I have an idea that she deliberately sought him out.
Rex Fortescue practically murdered my father. We didn't shoot him or stick a knife in him, but he left him to die. My mother made me swear on the Bible that I would kill him. Of course, I would never have done that. But I did want to pay him back.
And that is why you got the job as nurse to his son.
At first, I had the idea that I might just allow him to die. But of course, if you're a nurse by profession, you just can't do that. Actually, it was quite a job pulling Val through. And then he asked to marry me. And I thought, well, if I can get back the money his father swindled my father out of, that's a much more sensible way to go about things.
And it was you who put the blackbirds on his desk and in the pie?
I wanted to give him a fright. I wanted to bring it all back to him. You surely don't think that I murdered him?
No, I don't. By the way, have you been paying Miss Dove any money lately?
How did you know that?
A cheque for £500, if you please, Miss Dove. Payable to Mrs. Percival Fortescue.
The stupid bitch told you, I suppose.
Blackmail is a rather serious crime, you know.
It's very annoying. This job hasn't quite turned out exactly to plan.
I'm sure it hasn't. We've made a few inquiries. It's a curious coincidence that in the last three places you have filled so admirably...
No one's ever had a word to say against me.
There have been quite major robberies shortly after you left. The thieves seem to have been remarkably well informed as to where they might lay their hands on anything of any real value.
Coincidences do happen.
Oh, yes, they happen, Miss Dove. But they mustn't happen too often. Now, if you'd be good enough to make out that check.
Black Knave. Red Queen. You found out what you wanted, Miss Marple?
Yes, Miss Ramsbottom. I did.
I'm not asking you any questions. You're a shrewd woman. I knew that as soon as I saw you. Wickedness is wickedness and has got to be punished.
I do so agree.
Black Knave. I'm sorry for his wife, though.
So am I.
And you'll be going back home now, I suppose.
Back to St. Mary Mead. There is a new girl there from St. Faith's. I want to find out how she has been getting on while I have been away.
I've got a herring for your supper, miss. You'll find everything very nice in the house. Regular spring cleaning I've had.
Oh, thank you, Kitty. I'm glad to be home.
Your letters is there on the hall table, miss. And there's one as went to the house up the road by mistake.
Oh.
And they've been away and the house shut up for weeks, so they only found it yesterday. Said they hoped it wasn't important.
Thank you, Kitty.
Will that be all, miss?
For the moment, thank you. Dear Madam, you'll have seen the newspapers. It was murder, they say, but it wasn't me that did it. Not really, because I would never do anything wicked like that, and I know Albert wouldn't either.
I'm telling this badly, but you see, we met in the summer, and we was going to be married. Only Bert has been swindled out of his rights by this Mr. Fortescue, who's dead. Bert has this friend who works in a place where they make what you call a truth drug. Bert told me to be sure to give it to Mr. Fortescue with his breakfast. So I put it in the marmalade, but it must have been too strong. But I know it wouldn't be Bert's fault. Police are here, and I haven't heard from Bert.
Oh, madam, if only you could come here and help me, they'd listen to you. If you could only come here and talk to them. Yours respectfully, Gladys. P.S. I'm enclosing a snap of Bert and me, taken by one of the boys of the holiday camp. Bert doesn't know I've got it. He hates being photographed. But you can see, madam, what a nice, kind boy he is. Poor, silly, trusting, deluded girl. And to meet with such a heartless killer. But at least he won't escape justice now. I can make sure of that. Kitty?
Yes, Miss Marple?
I'd like a cup of tea, please. It's been a long journey.
In Agatha Christie's A Pocket Full of Rye, dramatized for radio by Michael Bakewell, Miss Marple was played by June Whitfield, and Inspector Neal by Nicky Henson. Miss Dove, Kristin Millward. Gladys, Clara Mackey. Sergeant Hay, Joshua Taub. Rex Fortescue, Derek Waring. Percival, Peter Yap. Jennifer, Natasha Pine. Lance, Ian Masters. Patricia, Annabel Mullion. Elaine, Deborah Berlin. Adele, Becky Hindley. Miss Ramsbottom, Margaret Ward. Mrs. Mackenzie, Charlotte Mitchell. Miss Grosvenor, Jilly Bond. Crump, Don McCorkindale. Mrs. Crump, Margaret John. Dr. Bairnsdorf, George Parsons. Vivian Dubois, Michael Tudor Barnes. Gerald Wright, Oliver Senton. Kitty, Claire Hayhoe. The play was directed by Enid Williams.